43. Zoya. Zoya couldn't think over the sound of Joris's laughter in her head.
Sancta Zoya.
She was no saint, it was podge-headed nonsense. But had she helped buy peace for Hrothka? Had she done right by leaving the Fjerdins alive? She swooped down to the coast, searching for a place to land that would be out of sight of prying eyes. She needed a moment in the cool dark to pull her thoughts back together, to understand herself again. Her mind felt different, not just her body. She couldn't grasp the shape of who she was. It was all too much. The soldiers' panic on the field, the Darkling's bemusement, the Druskella commander's wild rage, Nina's anguish, Nikolai. She could still feel his fear for her. There has to be more to life, even for soldiers like us. In those brief seconds, she had believed. We might shelter in each other. She was tied to all of them. Joris's knowledge echoed through her. A cave just north of Oskervo, hewn into the cliff wall. He had flown this coastline many times before. The cave was snug, but it would do. I should have killed the Fjerdins. I should have given them a wound from which they'd never recover. But that was an old voice. The voice of a hurt child who had no one to trust, who feared there would always be someone more powerful and more cruel than her. She would forever be a bloodthirsty, furious girl. But she might allow herself to be something else, too. If she had helped to earn peace for Hrothka, then maybe she could grant her own heart a bit of peace as well. She sat down with an awkward thud, nearly crashing into the cave wall before she managed to stop her speed. Utterly graceless. "You have to take me back," Nina said. Zoya gave a massive shrug. "Climb off or I'll throw you off." Nina yelped and half rolled off her, landing in a heap on the cave floor. Her clothes were soaked and her blonde hair looked like someone had tried to style it with a pitchfork. "Are you in my head?" Nina squeaked, pressing her hands to her temples. "Can you read my mind?" Blessedly not, but she could feel so much. It was terrifying. This was what she had always feared, this deep connection to the world. But she had opened the door. She'd burst right through it. There was no closing it now. Nina pushed to her feet. She was staring at Zoya with huge eyes, and Zoya wondered what she saw. Her own sight was keener, her sense of smell sharper. Each breath felt strange. Her belly, her lungs. What had she become? I can't believe it's you. Zoya couldn't quite believe it either. And yet, this was what Joris had wanted from her. It was the true gift that had come through his scales when she'd taken his life and he'd taken hers. But she didn't know how long she could keep this form. It still felt wrong to her, unstable. She sought some kind of explanation to offer Nina. There was a time when soldiers became beasts. And when Grisha didn't take amplifiers, they became them. "You didn't become a bear or a hawk, Zoya. You're a dragon. Can you... Is it permanent?" Zoya felt a shiver pass through her, an echo of Joris's loneliness. He had been able to take human or dragon form at will. She hoped the same thing would be true for her. "I don't know. Zoya, you have to take me back to Leviathan's mouth." "You will come home to Hrothka." "No, I will not. My mission isn't complete." A deep growl rumbled through Zoya and she snapped her huge jaws in the air. "Why must you be so stubborn?" "I could ask the same of you," Nina said. And she had the temerity to kick Zoya's foreleg with her tiny foot. "I put my life at risk to get you back, Nina. The apparat could still be alive. Your cover may be worthless." "I'm going to take that chance. I have to." Zoya huffed a breath and watched dust and pebbles billow through the cave. The cost of the dragon's form was just as high as she'd suspected it would be. She felt Nina's hurt, and it only made Zoya want to keep her closer, find a way to shield her from harm. It was unbearable. "Promise you'll come home to us." "I can't." "Then promise you'll be careful." "I can't do that either." Wretched girl. But she was going to let Nina go. Nina Zanuck was a soldier. Zoya had trained her well. And she had the right to choose her own path. Climb on. And hold tight, Zoya instructed. Nina laughed. That I can do. Zoya craned her neck back to look at Nina. She was beaming, her cheeks rosy. She looked nothing like the grieving girl Zoya had known. Happiness and anticipation shimmered around her as if they were her true shape, as if she wore a halo of gold. Zoya leapt from the mouth of the cave and let Nina's joy carry her over the sea. She shrouded them both in mist as they approached Leviathan. But absolute chaos had erupted aboard the base, and there was plenty of cover. She saw rafts and boats arriving and departing in swarms as officers, soldiers, and medical personnel traveled to and from the mainland. The battle had come to a standstill for now. Zoya knew that didn't mean peace. Saying goodbye to Nina again wasn't easy, but Zoya wasn't going to stand in the way of her decision. If she really believed she could resume her cover as Mealy Understudy, then she could still be a valuable asset and feed vital information to Ravka. But there was more. Zoya sensed the pull of Nina's longing toward someone vibrant, bright as a new sun, warm and coppery. The girl couldn't stay away from Fjerdens, it seemed. Zoya wondered if she should warn her against falling in love, against the danger it could put her in undercover. But it was foolish to think she could contain Nina Zenik's heart. I have to warn you, said Nina as they sat down near one of the piers. Tell the king we can't rely on Prince Rasmus. Hanna still has hope for him, but he's not who we thought he was. Not at all. One less ally. The prince had let his country's hatred choose his road. I'll create a distraction so you can rejoin the soldiers on base without notice. Nina grinned. That shouldn't be much of a challenge. Zoya bumped Nina with her snout. It was a gesture more intimate than she ever would have been tempted to make in her human body. Stay as safe as you can. Nina set a hand on Zoya's scales. She rested her cheek briefly against Zoya's head. Thank you, she whispered. And then she was vanishing up a ramp and into the bustle of the base. Zoya wondered if she would ever see Nina Zenek again. She set out over the waves, then whirled back around, exploding through the mist as she arced over the naval base. She heard screams from below, felt the Fjerdens' terror like an icy wave, and reveled in it. Fear was a language universally understood. She drew in a breath and released a crackling burst of lightning, then banked to the left and headed back to the mainland, her wings spread wide, feeling the salt spray against her belly as she coasted low over the water. She could still sense Nina's powerful heart, the steady beat of her courage. When you are tied to all things, there is no limit to what you may know. And apparently to what she would have to feel. All this emotion was exhausting. She was Zoya, and she was the knight known as Joris, and she was the dragon he had once slain. She circled the battlefield, noted the Fjerdens in retreat. It was hard to see so many bodies on the ground, feel the grief emanating from soldiers as they tended to their wounded and mourned their dead. But she could find no sign of the Starless Saint or his followers. The Darkling had been the first to kneel, though she had no illusions that he'd suddenly come around to their side. He wasn't done. And yet she couldn't guess his intent. His presence on the battlefield had been like a gap in all that life and fear. A deep well of eternity. Zoya turned toward the village of Pachesiana, where the Ravkan forces had set up their headquarters. The soldiers' camp came into view, and then the royal command tent. She knew she needed to focus to manage a landing in this small space, but she was more tired than she'd realized. She'd done too much too fast. She could feel her control over the dragon's shape slipping. And then she wasn't flying. She was falling. A gust of air caught her, buffering her descent. When she struck the earth, the impact was gentle, but it still came as a surprise, knocking the breath out of her. Some part of her wanted to just give in to her fatigue and slide into unconsciousness. She felt arms encircle her and lift her head. Zoya? Nikolai's voice. the voice of a king, the voice of a brilliant creative boy, left alone with his books and inventions, forever roaming an empty palace. His hurt and worry washed over her.
"Please," he whispered, "please."
The dragon's mind receded, leaving her mind blessedly empty of any thoughts but her own. Zoya forced herself to open her eyes. Nikolai's lip was bloodied. There was soot in his hair. But he was alive, and for this brief moment, he was holding her. She wanted to curl into him and let herself cry. She wanted to lie beside him and just feel safe for an hour. She had so much to say to him, and she didn't want to wait. Zoya made herself sit up. "The Fjerdens."
"Careful," he said, still helping to support her. "Nadia broke your fall, thank the saints, but you hit the ground hard."
"The Fjerdens," she repeated. "They retreated."
"We've called a truce."
Zoya saw Tolia with his big brow furrowed, Tamar biting her lip, Nadia with her goggles around her neck, Leonie holding tight to Adric's arm, Jenya with a hand pressed to her mouth. Relief flooded through her, and she wanted to pull them all close. Instead, she said, "We'll get no help from Fjerda's crown prince. Nina seems to have overestimated her influence."
"I wouldn't say that," Tamar mused. "An entire battlefield just declared you a saint."
"Actually, the Darkling declared you a saint," Nikolai corrected.
"Turning into a dragon probably helped," added Tolia.
"Did you know you could do this?" Jenya asked. "I can't believe you didn't tell me." Zoya shook her head. She felt impossibly cold, as if now that the dragon's fire had banked inside her, she would never be warm until it was kindled again. "There were Caergud on the battlefield," she said, remembering. They'd flown beside Nikolai's demon.
"It's all right," Tolia said, squatting down. "They fought on our side. But they had to disappear for a while. They couldn't risk questions."
"They don't exist," said Tamar. "At least according to the Shoe Queen."
"You're back," Zoya said.
Tamar winked. "You think I'd miss a fight?" She offered Zoya her hand and helped her to her feet. Nikolai's eyes widened.
"You are wearing the most extraordinary armor."
Zoya looked down at herself. Her rough-spun peasant clothes were gone. Her body was covered in a snug tunic and breeches made of metallic black scales that shimmered blue in the sun. She recognized this armor. It was what Joris had worn in human form, and it fit like a second skin. Her vanity didn't mind the effect, but she'd bloody well better be able to take it off. Leonie cocked her head to one side.
"Is it comfortable?"
"It's heavy," Zoya said, offering up her arm so the fabricator could feel the metal.
"It will make quite the impression in Oskervo," said Nikolai. "Fjerda has called for talks."
"Vadik Demidov is in Oskervo too," said Tolia. "The Fjerdens are in retreat for now, but they've switched tactics."
Tamar grunted in disgust. "They couldn't beat us on the field, so they're pushing the issue of succession. They've called for an assembly of Ravka's highest-ranking nobles."
Zoya couldn't believe what she was hearing.
"Our nobles?
They have no right to command our people." "We can stop them," said Jenya. "We'll block the assembly." Nikolai tugged on a pair of calf leather gloves. In the time since the battle, he'd changed into an immaculate field uniform.
"On the contrary," he said. "I've ordered airships sent for them. They'll be here in a few hours."
"For saints' sake, why?" asked Zoya. If the man could make something more difficult, he would.
"Because the longer we give them to plot and scheme, the worse it will be. Right now, West Ravka is grateful to us and angry with Fjerda for their betrayal. Jenya, I'll need you to see to my cut-up lip and make me look less the rogue and more the respectable monarch. Bastard or not, if I have any hope of keeping the throne, this is it."
An uncomfortable silence followed. Tamar broke it with a click of her tongue.
"Bastardy is the least of your worries."
"They know what you are now," said Zoya. She left for a few days, and everything went to hell. He'd released his monster onto the field. He'd shown all of Ravka the Demon King.
"True," said Nikolai. "But they know what you are, too, Sancta Zoya." "Do not call me that."
"It has a nice ring to it," said Tamar. Our Lady of Dragonfire? Suggested Nadia.
Sweet, scaly vengeance, said Jenya.
Zoya turned her back on all of them and strode toward the tents.
I'm going to go live in a cave,